And we're going to talk about American universities, because President Trump has ordered all American embassies to freeze all applications for student visas. And there will be plenty of them, given that the new academic year gets underway in just 3 months. This is all part of Trump's broader war against American unis. He says many of the million foreign students studying in the U.S. are radical propagandists. 10,000 British undergrads in America are now in limbo, and families thinking of sending their kids to study there next year are wondering if that's still a good idea. What do you think? Should the UK welcome more foreign students here rather than making it harder?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the Health Secretary is asking resident doctors in England to vote no in a ballot on strikes over pay. Wes Streeting said doctors have lost the support of the public and would choke the NHS by going back on strike. The BMA union wants a 29% rise to restore historical pay freezes. But Jamie Jenkins, former head of health stats at the Office for National Statistics, told LBC that's unrealistic.
You've got to remember that most of the junior doctors would have joined after 2008. They signed up knowing the salary, and now they're looking to get the backdated pay pretty much for the job they'd already chose. So no one's forced them to come in to become a junior doctor. They knew the pay, the hours and the training path, and to get another 29% pay rise on top of what they've got just seems unreasonable. It's not really how the real world works.
Benjamin Netanyahu's claimed Israel has eliminated senior Hamas leader Mohamed Sinwar. It's believed he was targeted during a strike on a hospital in southern Gaza in which 28 people were killed. The IDF hasn't been able to confirm his death. Yotam Confino is a reporter for The Telegraph based in Jerusalem.
When you have Netanyahu saying that Sinwar has been killed, but you don't have a confirmation from the IDF or from Hamas, I would take it with a grain of salt. I would also say at the same time, it does look like he was at least targeted and perhaps also killed.
Brothers Andrew and Tristan Tate have been charged with rape and other crimes. The Crown Prosecution Service says a pair will be extradited to Britain once a case against them in Romania is over. Detectives investigating a crash in Liverpool on Monday have been given more time to question a 53-year-old man. He's being held on suspicion of attempted murder and drug driving after a car was driven into crowds at the Premier League title parade. The government says to get working and building new reservoirs that will serve millions of homes in Cambridgeshire and South Lincolnshire needs to happen quickly. The Environment Secretary's designated the two projects as nationally significant. It's in a move to fast-track the planning process so there are no more hold-ups in supplying water to the thousands of new homes being built in the areas. And a review into the decision to close Heathrow Airport following a power outage has been found by bosses that bosses made the right call. The airport was shut for almost a day back in March following a fire at a nearby substation. LBC weather, heavy rain in the north tonight, lighter in the far south and southeast, a low of 6 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Simon Marks.
In for Ben Kentish tonight and again tomorrow night here on LBC. In this hour, I want to talk about American universities. President Donald Trump is waging war on them, demanding that they bend to his will or lose all of their federal funding. And he is now particularly targeting the 1.1 million foreign students who are already studying in the United States. And they include 10,000 from the UK pursuing undergraduate degrees there. He is shutting America's doors to any new foreign students hoping to study in the upcoming academic year. Why would he do this? Foreign students, after all, brought more than $44 billion in revenue to the United States last year. They are estimated to be responsible for the creation of 378,000 jobs. The answer? President Trump believes many foreign students are radical propagandists. Here he is on a rant earlier this week about Harvard University, the jewel in America's academic crown.
We want a list of those foreign students, and we'll find out whether or not they're okay. Many will be okay, I assume. And I assume with Harvard, many will be bad. And then the other thing is they're very anti-Semitic. Everybody knows they're anti-Semitic. And that's got to stop immediately.
Now, there is obviously a lot in there to unpack, but basically he is demanding that American universities provide him with background information on every single foreign student studying at Harvard and at other colleges across the United States. He wants all prospective students to have their social media accounts screened to make sure that their political views basically align with his. He also, by the way, wants to screen lecturers, administrators, staff, anyone who has anything to do with universities, so that his government gets to approve who studies on university campuses and who works on them as well. He talked there about anti-Semitism. He sees it everywhere on campuses, and his government has been rounding up people who have participated in pro-Palestinian protests on university campuses, which are, of course, entirely legal. And whether you agree with the demonstrators or not, they are also protected by the First Amendment to America's Constitution, which protects freedom of speech. But freedom of speech no longer seems to be in vogue in the land of the free, even while they come to the UK and criticise Britain over what they falsely claim is a rollback of free speech rights here. What does all of this mean if you are thinking of sending your son or daughter to an American university? Well, I would tell you to abandon the plan. Give it a rethink. It is too high risk. Even if Donald Trump doesn't mean it, even if he rows back and engages in a partial U-turn on this stuff, are you really going to risk parting with, say, $85,000 a year to send your 19-year-old to one of America's top universities, only to discover that your offspring is suddenly ordered out of the country? What's it like being an international student in the US these days? Alfie Williamson from Denmark studies at Harvard and spoke to LBC's Ben Kentish last weekend.
I was warned by multiple people not to speak out, not to put my name out there. My family, my friends, my peers, they all told me that I was taking great risk by voicing my opinion, which seems awfully ironic in a place like the United States, which was founded on the idea of freedom of speech. Many international students are too scared to speak out. They're too scared to show their faces in public when they hear there's ICE agents around, when there's a protest going on. And this just seems completely contrary to the pillars that the United States was founded on.
Now, let me tell you, as the father of two lads raised in Washington, D.C., I am personally delighted that both of them decided, and it was their choice, not ours, to study at universities right here in the UK. Which raises another question. Why are we making it harder for foreign students to come here? At a time when thousands of them are suddenly rethinking America as an option, I reckon Britain could clean up. Again, $44 billion in business last year for the US. Why aren't we now bringing it home? If you're an undergrad or a graduate studying in the US or thinking about going there, tell me what you're going through. If you're a parent who really wanted your kid to get a bit of Harvard or Columbia or UCLA on their CVs, are you giving it a rethink? And if you are a foreign student from another country, what could the UK do to make Britain a more attractive destination for you? You can call me at 0345 6060 973. Send WhatsApp messages to that number as well. Text 84850. Ask Alexa to send a comment to LBC. We're going to kick off tonight by crossing to Washington, D.C. I'm delighted to say that we are joined tonight by Chris Saliza, U.S. political commentator, a former CNN political analyst. And if you are not following him on Substack, take my word for it, you should be. Chris Saliza, thanks very much indeed for being on the program this evening. What's Donald Trump's end game here? Is he serious about shutting the country's doors to foreign students?
Gosh, I wish I knew. It would make things a lot easier, Simon. My general belief with Donald Trump when it comes to this fight with Harvard, when it comes to lots of things, is it's all a negotiation, right? It's he fancies himself this great deal maker. He's just simply trying to get the high ground in all of these conversations. That said, I really liked what you said at the open, which is these things, even if he doesn't go through with them, these things have an impact. right? If you are thinking of sending your kid to college in the U.S., whether or not Donald Trump is able to ban foreign students from coming in, which I think legally is very dicey, but the very fact that he proposes it, I think would cause you to rethink it at some level. So in a lot of ways, it's sort of, I don't know how serious he is about it. I will note, I always say the answer to all your questions is money. And you highlighted that $44 billion number. You know, a number of foreign students in the United States are full pay customers of universities, right? They are not on scholarship. They do not get financial aid. And therefore, if you take that revenue stream out, it becomes more difficult. So I tend to think he wouldn't go through with it, but the very fact he's talking about it will, to your point, have an impact.
And Chris, as you know better than I mean, we have seen astonishing scenes play out on the streets of America. Rumeysa Ozturk, the Turkish student at Tufts University, being dragged off the streets of Somerville, Massachusetts by masked agents of Donald Trump's government for literally the thought crime of publishing an op-ed in a student newspaper with which Marco Rubio and Donald Trump disagree. This is not a country that is sending a welcoming message, rooted in its own principles of free speech, to international students around the world.
No, I mean, I wish I could disagree with you, but I can't. Look, I always say, and I say to people on the left and the right, this free speech isn't only when it comes to speech you agree with. That's the whole point. The First Amendment is not really to protect speech that the majority of the country agrees with. It's to protect speech that the majority of the country disagrees with. That's the whole point. And I think we've lost that. And I do think, look, it's very interesting to sit in Washington right now. And look, I've been doing this for 25 years, and 10 of which have been dedicated almost exclusively to Donald Trump. It's really interesting to sit in D.C. I know it's somewhat depressing
you and me
when you
both,
think of it
Chris,
that way.
You and me both.
I know it. But it is very interesting to me because I will tell you, like, the Harvard story here, it was a big story and it is a big story, but in the crackdown on free speech on campuses, they're big stories, but I would not say they're the dominant story of any day. I mean, maybe, you know, I mean, when he announced the most recent thing about Harvard, which was, you know, another attempt to take away grant money from Harvard, which he's already sort of proposed, but a further restriction of money. It was, I quickly scanned the Washington Post, the New York Times, you know, some of the CNN, some of these big sites, and it was at the top of their home pages for an hour or two, but it was quickly replaced by the next thing. I think it was tariffs or, you know, the next thing that Donald Trump did. So one of the impacts of him saying and doing so many things is this is not as big a story as it would be if any other president approached speech on campus in this way.
Okay, so can I put to you what one of our listeners has texted in? Harley in Sussex has texted in and said, Simon, please stop sensationalizing a routine act of screening people coming into the country. Everyone applying for an ESTA has to give social media details. It is a bit strange also how you dismiss the radicalized anti-Semitic protests on campus, harassing, intimidating, and attempting to exclude those who don't share their views. Mm-hmm. Free speech, sure. Hate speech, no thanks. Now, there are listeners out there, Harley being one of them, and there will be many others, who say Donald Trump's got a point about these anti-Semitic protests that were taking place on some university campuses where, in some cases, criminal activity occurred. And you've got to give your social media account details when you apply for an ESTA. So what's the big deal if they actually want to look at the social media accounts of incoming foreign students?
So, Simon, my answer on this is my answer to a lot of things when it comes to Donald Trump. I actually think for the average American, Donald Trump diagnoses the what pretty well. Education. I don't think people want anti-Semitic speech on campus. I don't think anyone wants that. So I agree. It's the how the execution of the what that I think is problematic. So, yes, if there are documented evidence of anti-Semitic or hate speech, and hate speech, I know it probably shouldn't have a loose definition, but I think one person's hate speech may not be another's. But let's just say if we broadly can agree, anti-Semitic speech does not have a place on campuses. Fine. The problem is it bleeds into a lot of people where, and there are cases where it's like, okay, this person was doing it. Okay, got it. Fine. There's a lot of cases where it's a little more gray area, I guess I would say. And that's where you get into, I think, more of a difficulty. Neither I nor Donald Trump nor anyone else, or most people, I shouldn't say anyone, but most people in America oppose hate speech on campus or anywhere else. The issue is, how do you identify it and how do you deal with it? And how do you ensure that you are not restricting free speech? And that's a big challenge. Again, this goes back to the, free speech is not meant to protect speech with which you agree. It is meant to protect speech with which you expressly disagree. And that is a challenge. The other thing I would say about the social media accounts, and I do think this is meant to create a culture of fear on campuses. You heard from, you played the Swedish student from Harvard. I think there is concern there that any differing opinion from the opinion held by the administration, if you are a foreign national, puts you in some level of peril. Now, whether it does or not, I don't know, but that culture of fear is exactly what I would say that Republicans and Trump rightly diagnosed about sort of the wokeness of campuses over the last 4 years, which is that people are afraid to voice sentiments that are not sort of accepted by the politically correct mob. So I just feel like they're creating a problem that is very similar to one of the problems they aim to solve.
Yeah, and of course, also, it's impossible to separate all of this stuff from some of the other things that Trump is doing when he's going after the judiciary, law firms, the press, scientists. Yep. I mean, this is all part of a much
bigger
picture.
It's all part and parcel of the same thing. Yeah, that's absolutely exactly right.
Chris, I can't thank you enough for coming on the program tonight. Thanks so much. Chris Cillizza, US political commentator, former CNN political analyst, and as I was saying earlier, go and subscribe to him on Substack. He provides some of the pithiest commentary that you can find on the daily tsunami that engulfs us in the American capital. We're going to come back to your calls next on American universities. Would you send your kids there? Are you already sending your kids there? And is there an opening now for the UK to relax some of the new restrictions that the government has placed on foreign students coming here? Because if you relaxed them and opened your doors to some of the foreign students that I'm telling you will be pulling out of American universities, you could be bringing quite a bit of additional revenue to the UK. Time here on LBC, 17 and a half minutes past 11.
This is LBC.
Oh, no.
In the time it takes to unsend a risky text, you could find out if you're one of the Jaguar or Land Rover owners that's owed compensation. Visit claimsforcars.com. Answer a few easy questions and you'll find out in seconds. If your car has a faulty DPF filter, you could have a claim. Claims for Cars is helping people get back thousands on a no-win, no-fee basis.
Phew.
Get the answer in seconds at claimsforcars.com.
Find top-rated outdoor dining products on Amazon. Like this pizza oven with 5-star reviews, you'll get value and tasty pizza. Or these barbecue gloves. Remember to take off before eating.
Or this large windproof umbrella.
Because nobody wants a wet pizza. Amazon. Find highly rated products at prices you'll love.
Barclays Ready-Made Investments. The clue's in the name. Not Barclays Where Do I Begin Investments. You can start from £50. That's why they're not difficult to get started investments either. And you can choose your risk level. So they're hardly in at the deep end investments. So if you've got savings and you want to help grow your money over 5 years or more, then search Barclays Ready Made Investments. Make money work for you. Investing is not for everyone. The value of investments can fall as well as rise, and you may get back less than you invest. T's and C's apply.
Find out if you can claim compensation for a missold PCP agreement or a faulty DPF filter. Just visit claimsforcars.com and you'll get the answer in seconds.
Simon Marks on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Now, on this issue of whether you are required or are not required to provide your social media accounts to the US government when you apply for an ESTA, Sophie has texted in to say we do not need to input social media details into ESTAs. And I've actually just checked it, and Sophie is correct. You can choose not to disclose your social media account when you apply for an ESTA, but you can, and quite possibly will be asked by Border Patrol agents when you arrive in the United States to unlock your phone at the border and submit it for screening. So there is a distinction between what the Trump administration is proposing now with regard to foreign students who are seeking visas. They are, under the president's new acts, going to be required to provide details of their social media accounts, which they are not currently required to provide when they apply for an ESTA. Let's go back to the phone lines. Gavin has called LBC from Carlisle this evening. Gavin, what would you like to say about American universities?
I think it's silly, isn't it, for Trump to go in the UK, especially for the Russell Group University company. You know, you've got two big global brands that export education, and those are the Ivy League and the Russell Groups. Unfortunately, we have the Russell Groups here. So if I was running this country, I'd be embracing the fact that Trump's doing all he can to alienate foreign students, and I would be setting up a little task force whose mission would be to get as many of those students to come to the UK as possible and boost our economy.
I mean, it is an ironic bit of timing, all of this, isn't it, Gavin? Because the British government, the UK government, has only just tightened controls on international students coming here, but they took that action before this latest effort by Donald Trump got underway, really to alienate international students in the United States. Do you think they should be giving it another look?
Well, I don't know what the changes were that they did. Was that part of the white paper that came out about a month ago?
It was a result of outlined also in the Island of Strangers speech as well. It was all wrapped up in that precisely.
So some of the other parts of that really grabbed my attention at the time, when it comes to workers' visas, because that's going to cause a major problem in my life, and some of it's awful. But yeah, Keir needs to just have some sense. He needs to sit down with the university bosses and ask them what they would want. And I've no doubt that they would tell him, we need you to relax the rules, let us bring these people in, and let us make money for Britain. At the end of the day, these are companies that are actually in Britain that employ huge numbers of people in the localities. You know, it shocked me. Like, a lot of people in the UK, if you live in a town or a village or anywhere that doesn't have a university or doesn't have a significant university, you don't know how much money they generate for an economy. But when I went from Carlisle, where I grew up, to Newcastle, I was gobsmacked at the amount of money that was being made by the two universities there. And the amount of, you know, it's taxi drivers, it's coffee shop owners, it's bus drivers, it's local landlords, local builders that are renovating these properties, and decorators and gardeners, and, you know, the impact on the economy of a thriving university is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, and also, of course, because they contribute to scientific research and innovation, which in the United States has directly resulted in the US being the country that has won more Nobel Prizes than any country elsewhere in the world. So there is opportunity there, because if you can bring some of those students and those graduates to the UK, I mean, especially at a time of so much technological change, AI, innovation. I mean, the opportunity to boost the economy, not just through the cash that they be bringing through the door to study here, but also their long-term impact on society, could be substantial.
Yeah, it sounds like you understand all this. I mean, the amount of, like, my university was a research-based university, and they had links to different engineering firms and a lot of links in medicine as well, but that wasn't my area. And they were constantly making breakthroughs. And the foreign students fund the university, because they pay so much more per seat than the actual cost of their education. That then partially funds a British person who gets to go to university for cheaper, and it partially funds things like the university, the research. That the benefits of any research done, any advancements done, it's then taken by the big companies who are, you know, going to use that new method to lay a road or to, you know, install new drainage systems. Or, you know, I'm going a bit engineering-y here, but, you know, it could be any field. And then they're then employing builders, they're employing drivers, they're employing crane controllers and such. And that's, again, boosting our wider economy. And that could be up and down the country. A new method for, I don't know, the installation of soil treatment, let's say, developed by Newcastle University, and then there could be a full new industry using that method, and 4,000 to 5,000 builders employed doing it.
Yep.
You know,
and the added advantage is that students here, British students going to universities and colleges here in the UK would also find themselves surrounded by students from all over the world and exposed to ideas and cultures from around the world. I mean, I know when I went to university here, I was stunned by the fact that at the school that I went to, half the undergraduate intake was from the United States. And look at where I ended up. Gavin in Carlisle, thanks very much indeed for calling into the programme. Yvonne has texted in from Hastings, and she says, regarding Donald Trump, is it true he's got the needle because his son Barron wasn't accepted to Harvard? And I'm really glad you asked that question, Yvonne, because last night on the programme, I suggested that that was in fact the case. Overnight, while in the hours after last night's programme, unconnected, I'm sure, to the fact that I said it on the air, Melania Trump, the First Lady of the United States, put out a statement saying that actually, she said, it's not true. Barron Trump, she said, never applied to study at Harvard and was not rejected by the school. Let's go back to the phone lines. David is in Edinburgh tonight. David, what would you like to say?
Hi, I just broke into the radio show when Donald Trump was saying that anybody who's anti-Semitic, anti-Semite, will be dismissed. Well, you know something? I think he's quite right. I think the universities are full of anti-Semites, and this country as well. I don't think it's fair. Jewish students are really terrified. And if he's dismissing people and they're coming in and he wants to know the history of them, he's quite right. We never get the same kind of complaint about Muslim students, do we? It's always about Jewish students. You seem to have taken them as a scapegoat all the time. And I think it's terribly unfair. And if he's doing it, well, he's got my backing, because I do not agree with the Jewish students being isolated all the time.
But David, what constitutes students who are anti-Semitic? Does the participation in a pro-Palestinian protest on a university campus that is covered by, in the United States, the First Amendment to the Constitution on freedom of speech, does participation in a pro-Palestinian protest, simply participation in that kind of a demonstration, in your mind, constitute anti-Semitism?
Well, let me put it this way. If we have pro-Palestinian marches, as we have in this country nearly every week, I would say that's anti-Semitism, wouldn't you? And these marches, and it's been starting in the universities for quite a long time. And it's quite frightening if you're Jewish and you want to go and study, and all of a sudden you've been ostracized because pro-Palestinian students make the life a hell. And that's why he's come up with that. And no wonder he wants to have people investigated, because a lot of them have got pro-Palestinian views, and they're going to university.
But pro-Palestinian views, David, are not necessarily anti-Semitic views?
Well, let me put it this way. Okay, I'll maybe agree. We can all have views, but when you go on marches and you say for the river to the sea, I would think that's anti-Semitic, wouldn't you?
I think that case can certainly be made and has been made by Jewish students on American university campuses who argue that phrase leaves them feeling vulnerable and under assault.
Exactly.
But I think that it is incredibly complicated to balance that against the constitutionally protected freedom of speech that these students enjoy. I see that one of our listeners has texted in to say that a Republican senator has been making the point on another broadcaster tonight that the First Amendment only applies to US citizens. That's not a statement of fact. That happens to be a theory that is being advanced by the Trump administration. But in the case of Rumeysa Ozturk, the Turkish student who was dragged off the streets of Massachusetts because she wrote an article for a student newspaper calling on Tufts University in Massachusetts to divest from any investments that it had in Israel, that's not an anti-Semitic move.
Well, whatever way you interpret it, it's still basically it's anti-Semitic because let me tell you something. If you're targeting Jewish people in universities all the time, and you're frightening these people, it's not good. And there's a build-up of the left within universities that are overpowering Jewish students, and that's why they're getting frightened. And Trump is right. I don't agree with everything Donald Trump says, but he is right when it's not fair. And that's why he's actually investigating a lot of people that come into America now, you know. And all of a sudden, you said that they're going to bring students over to this country. Well,
no, I'm saying there's an opportunity. I'm not saying they're going to. I'm saying there's a real opportunity.
Are you saying that
would be a problem because you'd be importing anti-Semitism to this country?
Let's put it another way. If there's money that the universities are going to get through this, you're actually, if you like, important. What's the word I'm looking for? Important anti-Semitism into this country, and it's bad enough in this country without any more.
Okay, so you're arguing close the doors in order not to bring what you view as anti-Semitism into this country on university campuses here. David, thank you very much indeed for calling in. Many listeners are texting in. Alan says David is spot on. Ian says I totally agree with Scottish David. Nadia has texted in with a different viewpoint. Most people or students are not anti-Semitic, she says. It's anger at what the Israeli government is doing in Palestine. How on earth is it anti-Jewish? It's people simply against what is taking place in Palestine. Now, I don't want this hour now to descend into an hour about the Middle East, because I do want to keep it very focused on what Donald Trump is doing in terms of trying to restrict the ability of foreign students to study in the United States if they pursue viewpoints with which he disagrees, viewpoints that are covered by America's First Amendment free speech protections at a time when the American government says that in the UK, free speech is under attack. We're going to get back to this conversation after our news headlines, which are coming just a little bit late at 27 minutes to midnight, and they come from Daryl Jackson.
The Health Secretary is asking resident doctors in England to vote no in a ballot on strikes over pay. Wes Streeting said they'd choke the NHS by going back on strike. The BMA union wants a 29% rise to restore historical pay freezes. Israeli forces haven't been able to confirm the death of Hamas leader Mohammed Sinwar, despite Benjamin Netanyahu claiming he's been eliminated. He was included in a list of leaders killed by recent strikes on Gaza. Andrew Tate has been charged with 10 counts of rape against three women in the UK. In total, the social media influencer and his brother Tristan are facing 20 offences, which include human trafficking and actual bodily harm. They previously denied allegations against them. LBC weather, heavy rain in the north tonight, lighter rain in the far south and southeast, a low of 6 degrees.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the all-new LBC app. Download it for free from the App Store.
Barclays Ready Made Investments. The clue's in the name. Not Barclays Where Do I Begin Investments. You can start from £50. That's why they're not difficult to get started investments either. And you can choose your risk level. So they're hardly in at the deep end investments. So if you've got savings and you want to help grow your money over 5 years or more, then search Barclays Ready Made Investments. Make money work for you. Investing is not for everyone. The value of investments can fall as well as rise, and you may get back less than you invest. T's and C's apply.
Find top-rated wellness products on Amazon, like these aromatherapy candles with 5-star reviews. I smell fantastic value. Or this essential oils massage set. Oh, that's better. Oops, drifted off. And this single-serve coffee machine, back in the room. Amazon, find highly rated products at prices you'll love.
You could be £10,000 richer just in time for summer. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
Thanks to their unique boutique spirit, there really is nothing quite like a Saga River Cruise. There are the elegantly designed Spirit ships, the all-inclusive dining, and of course, Saga's carefully selected excursions. You know, they'll even drive you to and from the airport with their nationwide chauffeur service.
How long now, Charles?
Oh, half an hour.
Marvellous. Search Saga River Cruises. Experience is everything. 2026 season on sale now. Chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply, over 50s only.
Leading Britain's conversation with Simon Marks. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
And we're going to come back to more of your calls about the situation facing foreign students in the United States. Would you still send your son or daughter to an American university under circumstances in which they could definitely at some point find themselves thrown out of the country and sent home, given Donald Trump's new antipathy towards foreign students? And you could be tens of thousands of dollars in the hole, because some of these universities in the United States, tuition alone, $85,000 a year. Imagine putting that kind of money up and then finding suddenly that something had taken place on a university campus and your son or daughter were being shown the door from the United States. We'll get back to that in just a moment. But first, the parents of a baby boy who died aged 15 weeks after living in a London flat deemed uninhabitable by an independent survey have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. An inquest for baby Akram will take place in August. Notting Hill Genesis, the housing association that managed the property, say they are working with the relevant authorities as they conduct their investigations. We want to warn you beforehand that this piece contains audio that some listeners may find distressing. LBC's reporter Helen Hodinot has this exclusive report.
Hello.
A mum trying to distract her baby as he struggles with his breathing. Akram was born on the 8th of November last year. His mum, Ayat's third child.
He was a playful, good baby. He was very playful. When he was months old, he started to laugh with me. And even we used to listen to music together. We had a song that we always listened to together.
Home for the Mohammeds, a family of five originally from Sudan, was this one-bed flat in Hampstead. A broken tap runs water, the smell of damp hangs in the air, and there's mould coating the walls and their belongings. An independent survey carried out when Akram was a month old concluded Notting Hill Genesis was failing in its duty to ensure the property was fit for human habitation.
Mould and damp, and behind here is all mould and damp.
For months, Savas Panas from the Pillion Trust, which helps disadvantaged people, worked with Akram's dad, Abdushafi, to raise the alarm, claiming the conditions were affecting the family's health.
We sent the reports, everything that I could get and everything that Abdushafi could find for me, we forwarded on to say, we're not playing a game. This is dangerous. This is serious. Please, 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 prioritise this family.
Notting Hill Genesis say they carried out a thorough mould wash in September last year, but 3 months later, the survey found mould in every room. In February, Akram's mum took him to the GP with breathing problems, but they were sent home, told he would probably grow out of it. In the early hours of the next morning, he became unresponsive. His parents rushed him to A&E.
They tried to do the CPR, they tried to do that sort of thing. Medical terms that I never heard about. And it was so scary. Eventually they stopped doing what they're doing. And they said, okay, we can't do them anymore because he's dead. Your son is dead. Actually, I didn't believe them. I didn't understand. No, he'll be okay. He'll be okay. Please, can you try again?
Baby Akram died aged 15 weeks. The results of a pathology report shared with LBC by the family's solicitor found he had late-onset Group B strep, which resulted in acute pneumonia. Experts tell us it's not caused by mould, but say poor living conditions can in some cases lower a baby's immune system, making them more susceptible to acute infection. And while full answers from the inquest are pending, Akram's dad tells LBC he believes the condition of their home contributed to his death.
The mould helped to kill my son. Under the condition of the house, when it's raining, the water coming from inside. Damp, it smell strong like the air is not fresh.
Akram's family is calling on the government to urgently fully implement Awab's law, which will force social landlords to address issues quickly. It's named after Awab Ishak, a Sudanese 2-year-old who died in Rochdale in 2020 from breathing problems caused by extensive mould in his home. In February, the same month Akram was born, the government announced a delay to fully implementing the law until 2027, though the rollout starts in October, when social landlords will be forced to fix dangerous damp and mould in set time periods.
I'm Deborah Garvey and I'm policy manager at Shelter. We are disappointed that it's going to take so long to implement. If there are delays, then that can represent a real danger to the health and safety of tenants.
Notting Hill Genesis say they're deeply saddened by the tragic loss of Akram. They say they're working with the relevant authorities as they conduct their investigations and that no determination has been made by the coroner as to the cause of his death. The government says Akram's case is a devastating tragedy, but that it would be inappropriate to comment further ahead of the inquest.
LBC's Helen Hoddenott, and she will be continuing to follow that story for us as it continues to develop. Tomorrow, another piece of exclusive journalism here on LBC, our crime correspondent Andy Hughes has been looking at the scale of knife crime in schools and playgrounds.
More and more children are choosing to carry knives, and they're not afraid to use them. Make no mistake about it. This is the biggest threat to young lives we've ever faced in this country.
Do you know anyone who's been stabbed?
Yeah, I know, like, quite a few people.
Our investigation can reveal that thousands of children are now taking deadly weapons into their own schools.
You'd bring the knife into school?
Yeah.
And what's worse, they're getting younger.
The youngest one for me was 9.
So what is happening to the younger generation? What's changed?
We're living in a digital world now where violent behaviour is almost normalised in the minds of some young people.
You can hear that exclusive report from LBC's crime correspondent Andy Hughes tomorrow all day here on LBC, and I'm sure there will be plenty of opportunities to discuss the findings of that report as well. Let's go back to our conversation about what Donald Trump is doing to American universities and to foreign students studying there. Steve is on the line from Kingsbury. Good evening, Steve.
Evening, Simon.
How are you?
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
A new voice I'm not familiar with. Ben's gone taking daylight shift.
Yeah. Ben is filling in for Tom this week, and I'm filling in for Ben. But it's lovely to hear from you. What would you like to say?
Right. So the university question, which is kind of linked with the Esther question, I joined the hour a little bit late.
Mm-hmm.
I think these two are connected.
They are.
They definitely are. To what extent could be argued upon? I'm over 50. I'm long past the age of university admission. I applied for an ESTA card, and I've got about 16 months left on it. This is what I said to your producer lady. It did ask social media profile questions, And I spoke to a couple of friends of mine who applied to internship recently, and they said, yeah, I answered that. I told them mine. So I said, yeah, I'll give them a social media. I gave them my LinkedIn. My LinkedIn has a profile picture of me that's 20 years old. It's functional. It's genuine. I just don't use it very often. So if you want to follow the law, follow the law. Don't do it the way they expect.
But it is optional, right, when you fill out the ESTA. You could have declined to provide the social media account and still been granted the ESTA.
I think in light of what happened and what has happened in the American universities recently, they are going to focus that question much more on the younger age group. So if I was like anywhere between the ages of 19 and 25, or maybe 30, and I was applying for an ESTA card or a student visa, they would enforce that question.
Yeah, well, they're certainly going to
stringently.
They're certainly going to enforce it for applicants seeking student visas to travel to the United States. But for the rest of us, people that might be thinking of going to a conference in the United States or go on holiday in the United States, when you apply for that ESTA, it's voluntary at this point to provide the social media account, although they could stop you at the airport and say, give me your phone, give me your laptop, I want to see your social media.
Well, I was, when I went to America, I'll start that sentence again, sorry. When I went to the US twice, August last year and January of this year, all I was asked to do is open my laptop, turn it on to prove that it's genuinely a device, not just like a pocket weight.
Yes.
Because like many years ago, like we have to take our shoes off to go.
Yeah, that's a security precaution. But did they? But when you got to the United States, did they ask to look at your social media accounts?
No.
No.
They just asked to prove that the machine is genuine.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Steve, thanks very much for calling in. Steve, with his experience of applying for an ESTA, and as I was saying before, with the ESTA, you can voluntarily provide your social media accounts, and you could choose to do that if you wanted to, or you could decline to provide them, and they would have the right to stop you at the airport on the way into the United States and ask to see them on your telephone or your laptop. More of your calls coming up on President Trump, foreign universities. Are you thinking of sending your son or daughter to an American university? One of our listeners has asked me for advice, so I'll try to answer his question coming up here on LBC. It's 14 minutes to midnight.
LBC, this morning on Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Is it time to decriminalise the possession of cannabis? Well, a commission that's been set up by the London Mayor, Sadiq Khan, and chaired by a very prominent politician, thinks it probably is. The chair is Charlie, now, of course, Lord Faulkner, who's a KC, and joins me now. How am I going to get it? If it's decriminalised, how will I buy it?
Well, that's the compromise that is made. You have to buy it through criminal sources unless you've got...
How will your recommendations work, Lord Faulkner? Because I can use it for personal use, but the minute I go to someone on Blackheath High Street... Greenwich High Street, I'm breaking the law, am I not?
You're not breaking the law, but the person who's selling it to you is. The current position, Nick, is that so many people get it now so easily that it is extremely unlikely to have an impact on the actual amount that people use.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
Okay, I want you to close your eyes and think of your car. Now I want you to imagine yourself selling that car and getting a really great price for it. You just got the best offer for your car, like 500,000 other customers. So sell your car today. It's not magic, it's Motorway. 84% of sellers got more than market price for their car. Validated against 2 independent sources. Visit motorway.co.uk/claims.
When you sail on a Saga cruise, you really can relax, because so much is included. A choice of speciality restaurants? Included. A balcony with every cabin? Included. Wonderfully attentive staff? Included. Spotting a whale out at sea? Included. Realising the whale is actually just a wave? Included. Search Saga Boutique Cruises 2026 season on sale now. Experience is everything. T's and C's apply, over 50s only.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
Find top-rated outdoor dining products on Amazon.
Like this pizza oven with 5-star reviews, you'll get value and tasty pizza. Or these barbecue gloves. Remember to take off before eating.
Or this large windproof umbrella.
Because nobody wants a wet pizza. Amazon. Find highly rated products at prices you'll love.
What's your possible? The vision only you can make happen. Whatever the size of your business, accelerate your growth with the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform. Power your possible with the number one recommended cloud accounting software, Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
This is LBC with Simon Marks. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Let's take a quick look at tomorrow's papers tonight. They've just arrived here. Both the Daily Mail and the Daily Mirror continue on their front pages to focus on the Liverpool parade car ramming with more details about the suspect in the case. As you know, police have been given more time to continue questioning him. The Times has as its lead story, and this is relevant to our discussion this hour, Britons could be barred from the US for censoring Americans online. According to the Times, Britain and Europe have become a hotbed of digital censorship, mass migration, restrictions on religious freedom, and numerous other assaults on democratic self-governance, according to a senior US State Department advisor, as new visa restrictions, the ones we're talking about right now, were announced by his boss, Marco Rubio. The iPaper features an exclusive story on its front page saying the BBC is letting off over 75s who fail to pay their TV licence fee. The Guardian, anger over poor housing could spark social tension, according to a watchdog. It also reports on John McDonnell calling for challenges to Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer. The Daily Express says that funding has been secured to guarantee some D-Day veterans can honour the fallen. That was a Daily Express campaign. Daily Telegraph, army of hackers to take on Putin. A £1 billion investment will give the military online firepower against hostile states. And the Financial Times, and this is an interesting story, Christine Lagarde discussed an early exit from the European Central Bank in order potentially to head the World Economic Forum in Davos. As for the Independent, according to the Independent, they focus on Donald Trump talking about foreign aid cuts. He blames the European Union in an exclusive conversation with the Independent's correspondent Andrew Feinberg, and Metro focuses on the fines levied against Thames Water over the last few hours, with the classic headline, £123 million down the drain. That is a look at tomorrow's newspapers tonight. Let's go back to our conversations about American universities, and let's talk to Paul, who's been waiting for a while to talk to us from Twickenham. Paul, good evening to you.
Good evening, Simon. Well, I think, Simon, I would not be prepared to send anyone I knew to a university at the moment in America, because I feel that they'd be at risk of detention or worse. I think it's a very dangerous and stupid thing that Trump is doing. I think his attitude, Simon, combines petulance, naivety, stupidity, fascism, and everything else. My main point, Simon, is I don't believe that the majority of students who come from overseas or who are native-born in America and who protest against what's going on in the Gaza situation are anti-Semitic. This allegation that's been made on your program by previous callers and all around, this is absolute nonsense. To criticise what the handling of the Gaza war by Israel is not anti-Semitism. That needs to be said again and again. Today at the United Nations, the vast majority of people speaking at the conference were condemnatory of what Netanyahu and his government is doing, and that was not anti-Semitic, as anyone who watched the proceedings today.
Right, and Paul, we've had several listeners who have texted in to say that, of course, there are some Jewish students that have participated in some of those pro-Palestinian demonstrations on campuses. I do want to push back against one thing that you said, though, because to be fair to President Donald Trump, he's not saying that most of the students from overseas are anti-Semitic. He's actually saying that once the United States looks at the background of all of these students, he thinks most of them will pass muster and will get to stay in the United States. He just wants to stop those that he deems to be anti-Semitic from being able to study at American universities. And that, of course, in and of itself is a pretty draconian step for any American president to be taking.
Well, if there are students who wish to come over and spread anti-Semitism in America, fair enough. I don't object to them being challenged and looked into. But it obviously, Simon, goes far wider than that. And there is an implication that he said American universities are basically anti-American and anti-Semitic because they're pro-Palestinian. Mm. This is utter nonsense. Ehud Olmert, a previous prime minister of Israel, has been on the television several times recently on mainstream channels, absolutely denouncing what Netanyahu and his government are doing. And I would also make the point, as many Jewish students would surely agree with me, Simon, that half the Old Testament is concerned by prophets condemning, wrong attitude by their temporary government or whoever was the king at the time. And they were not anti-Semitic. Just a final point, that Simon, if I may, it's a silly little point, really, but a lot of people keep saying anti-Semitic. It's not Semitic, it's Semitic, and it comes from Noah's sons, who were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. But, I mean, Trump doesn't understand students. He would have condemned the Aldermaston marches protesting against nuclear weapons, presumably, which happened in here, in this country, in the 50s and 60s. Presumably, he would have condemned those people as pro-Russian people who wanted to overthrow the country.
Right.
Not at all.
Yeah, I think that he has his mind, Paul, on the long history of student protests in the United States and elsewhere. I think he probably would have condemned Danny the Red, if your memory goes back that far. Paul in Twickenham, thanks very much for calling in. That takes me to Simon, who has texted in to ask me, the other Simon. He says, I'm a Brit in the USA. My son is grade 10, rising to grade 11, and will be applying to colleges over the next 2 years. Should he risk USA universities for undergrad, or shall I push him to the UK, Canada, or somewhere else? Now, I am not an educational consultant, and I'm not even going to play one on the radio, but I will simply tell you, Simon, what we did in our family, which is that both of my lads, who are American, as you may know, they have both passports, they're Brits and Americans, they've decided to come to university here. One's just wrapping up at the University of Edinburgh, the other's just kicked off, finished up his first year at King's College here in London. And they're having a fabulous experience and have had fabulous experiences at both of those universities. I've got friends back in Washington, D.C., who have sent their children to Canadian universities. And I think that, you know, the bottom line is there are lots of options out there. And given the febrile nature of what is taking place on campuses and at the White House, it might be sensible to take a wide look at the opportunities that exist. Let me wrap up this hour with a first-time caller to LBC. It is Ali from Swadlincote in South Derbyshire. I hope I said that correctly. Ali, what would you like to say?
Bang on, Simon. Thank you very much. agreeing a lot with what the previous caller has said, to be honest with you. The danger there is that it depends on your definition of anti-Semitism as well. They're not even getting the definition right. And by definition, I mean in terms of the actions. You look at historically as to what Donald Trump has done in terms of, like, calling fine young men, you know, groups like the Proud Boys, who've actively marched through the streets of America, stating the Jews will not replace us. And yet somehow he doesn't seem to call them out with anti-Semitism. Yet there are religious groups out there, Jewish groups out there. Even in the UK, there's been people whose families were in Auschwitz, involved in the extermination by the Nazis, who've been arrested because they've taken a pro-Palestinian stance. You know, people deeming a statement like from the river to the sea without understanding the fact that that was actually originally coined in 1964 by the Likud party as a part of their original charter. It was the first sort of like, you know, point of use there. So, I mean, like, if you're going to start stifling academics in terms of how they express themselves without looking into the history of things, it sets a very dangerous precedent. And where does it stop?
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's also important to underscore, Ali, they don't just want to scrub the backgrounds of students, faculty and administrative staff for their viewpoints on the Middle East. This is not just restricted to Donald Trump having issues with the viewpoints on the Middle East. They want to see more broadly whether the views of faculty and students align with a Make America Great Again broader agenda. But Ali, thanks very much indeed for calling in. That wraps up our hour on American universities. In the next hour, we're going to shift gears and talk about parenting. How old is too old to be a new parent? We're going to hear about a husband and wife, both 72, who have just secured the legal go-ahead to parent a surrogate baby boy. He's just 16 months old. They will be 82 when he starts secondary school, 89 when he applies to university. The courts weighed all that up and said they could go ahead and parent the child. Now, I know we're all living longer, 72 may be the new 50, but ethically, morally, is there an age at which it's too old to become a parent of a newborn? Where would you draw the line?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight, the health secretary says he wants resident doctors to vote against strike action. It's after polling suggested almost half of the British public are against proposed walkouts. They're being balloted by the British Medical Association, who want a 29% rise to restore historical pay freezes. The health secretary, Wes Streeting, speaking directly to doctors, has said they can't afford to return to a continuous cycle of standoffs, strikes and cancellations.
Strike action, industrial action should always be a last resort. And frankly, I'd understand it if you had a health secretary.